On the East Coast, the winter of 2012 is closing out as something of a non-event, and with each passing day, spring looms closer and closer. One way to tell is by the appearance of crocus blossoms, and another is the appearance of a special feature on first-time novelists in Publishers Weekly. Welcome, everyone, to our special Friday feature in CCC's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally, and every week, Beyond the Book speaks with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that publishers, editors, authors, agents, and librarians will talk about when they return to work on Monday. Joining me first on the show today is Michael Coffey, PW's co-editorial director. Michael, welcome for the first time to Beyond the Book.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're delighted to chat with you. This is a really interesting little thing you do every spring and fall season. PW selects a dozen or so authors with promising debuts in fiction. It's a coveted distinction. After all, any new author, especially in fiction, is worried about getting lost in the onslaught of a season's title. So to single out someone in the months leading up to their pub date can obviously mean a lot. But Michael, I guess the writers aren't the only ones who benefit.
No, the writers are not the only ones who benefit. We hope readers and booksellers will benefit as well. We try to select authors each spring and fall who have an interesting backstory and evidence of some real ardent support in the industry from their publishers, whether big or small. And we can really hear the passion behind books that they believe in the pitches that are made to us. In this season, our features editor, Dick Donahue, and I chose 11 authors with promising first novels coming. And it's quite a diverse lot, as usual. But we did see some kind of familiar themes, and I'm not quite sure what to make of them.
Well, you know, you have a pretty decent track record in some of these choices. Tell us about some of the books that have gotten this attention in past years.
Well, to underscore the diversity of the lot that we generally have, we've singled out everything from former President Jimmy Carter's first novel, a historical novel called Hornet's Nest, to Edward P. Jones's The Known World. Jones himself was not very known to the world at the time, but that book went on to win a Pulitzer Prize. We chose Lauren Weisberger's The Devil Wears Prada, which the world knows a lot about now. It became a major motion picture. And last spring, we chose among the books was Teju Cole's Open City, which probably made every top 10 list this year.
Right. Well, let's get into the list then, Michael Coffey. Tell us about who we're going to start off with here. He's a veteran of publishing, but not a veteran of novel writing.
Right. We actually have three authors who are publishing insiders, more or less. The first on our list is John Donatich. He, for 20 years, has been at Yale University Press. He's the director there. He's well-connected in other respects, too. His wife is the fairly well-known literary agent, Betsy Lerner. Henry Holt will publish his book titled The Variations, a very moving story about a Catholic priest in New Haven, Connecticut. He's quite a character himself. Drinks while drives and taunts state troopers on the highway. But he's a gentle soul, and he's tending to a very troubled flock. And it's a beautiful book about a young man he tries to mentor who is learning the Bach-Goldberg variations. He's a young black piano prodigy from a poor part of town. It's a beautiful book.
Well, if he's drinking and driving and taunting state police officers, I'm betting he's one of those characters that's got that bumper sticker that says, "God is my co-pilot."
Could very well be. He seems to act as if he's being protected somehow. But he steers, does Donatich, this book and that priest, to a very moving ending. There's another book editor of quite a bit of experience in New York named Chris Pavone. He worked at Clarkson Potter as a cookbook editor, but his wife got a very good job and they moved to Luxembourg. She was helping launch the Kindle there. He ended up being sort of a house daddy, taking care of the kids. He took language classes, and he ended up meeting a lot of expatriate or expat mothers at daycare centers and this sort, and ended up writing a thriller called The Expats about one of the expat wives gets involved in espionage. It's a very hotly anticipated book, and it's being published by Crown, Its editor told us it was a very sleek puzzle. And Pavone also, I think, leveraged some of his connections in the industry. He showed the book to the very powerful agent, David Gernert, who represented it and got a preempt from Crown right away.
Well, another of the veterans from publishing that you cite is someone who kept their project under wraps for quite a long time.
Yes, Carol DeSanti, who is a beloved editor at Penguin and has been in the industry for quite some time, and is known for championing women's voices in literature. She's edited Terry McMillan and Tracy Chevalier and many others, but those are two prominent best-selling authors of hers. And she rather, as she put it, clandestinely worked on this novel about a 19th century French woman. The book is called The Unruly Passions of Eugénie R. It's said to be an absinthe-soaked novel full of social upheaval. And Carol kept it under wraps. In a sense, she said, having to keep her mind away from the business ideas that pretty much, preoccupy her when she's an editor in order to free herself up to write freely. And the book is showing a lot of promise. Among the other books we have in our selection is a novel coming from a woman named G. Willow Wilson. It's from Grove Atlantic, and it's called Aleph the Unseen. Wilson herself, the author, is an American woman who has converted to Islam. The novel is said to be a blend of urban fantasy and cyberpunk about an Arab Indian computer hacker who works to protect the identities of citizens in an unnamed Middle Eastern state who are being surveilled. The editor at Grove, Amy Hundley, was working on this book as the Arab Spring was emerging, she told us, and the book seemed incredibly prescient to her. So this is quite a timely novel that I'm sure will get a lot of attention. A book that is sort of in the aftermath of 9/11 in its genesis is an interesting one by Christina Alger. She's a young Harvard grad who was headed for a career in academia when her father, a mutual funds manager, died in the World Trade Center in 9/11. She then graduated and moved to New York to be with her mother and got a job in the financial industry at Goldman Sachs and was on hand for another kind of collapse, this one being the economic collapse of 2008. And she's written a novel about a prominent family called The Darlings, which is the name of the novel as well. And Penguin will publish this. So this is bound to get some real attention because she is quite an insider with respect to Wall Street. And of course, the country is still trying to recover from that collapse as well.
Well, and another book that you're going to tell us about, it sounds like if we didn't know better, it would be a children's book. But in fact, it's really very much for adults. It's about a creature that talks, and it's an unusual creature indeed.
Yes, it's a duck-billed platypus. And the editor of this book at the imprint at Hachette called 12, the editor is Carrie Goldstein, did indeed call it the ultimate kids book for adults. The title of the book is Albert of Adelaide. It's written by Howard Anderson, who's a 66-year-old defense attorney in New Mexico. I will only say that 12 had quite a bit of success last year with another talking animal novel called The Evolution of Bruno Littlemore, which was about a talking chimpanzee. And many booksellers and book buyers will remember that book. And they're quite bullish on their platypus. They have a 50,000 copy first printing. And another of our selections is coming from Random House. It's edited by the very respected editor, Kate Medina. And it's called The Age of Miracles by one Karen Walker. It's a coming-of-age story that's set against a very weird apocalyptic event. It's the Earth's rotation is apparently slowing down, and the days get longer and longer. And this book already has raised quite a bit of interest, or generated quite a bit of interest, in overseas markets. It's sold in 25 countries already.
Well, you call it an apocalyptic event. I suppose it would be, but having more time is something we all wish for. So, I suppose it depends on your point of view.
Yes. I guess maybe we would age more slowly if the days were longer. Is that true?
I don't know. But it's and you know, if we read the book, we can at least find out whether she addresses that. There's a poet that is included in this list, but it turns out the poetry she was writing turned into prose.
Yes, the poet's name is Regina O'Melveny, and she was working her craft, writing what she thought were prose poems about a woman practicing medicine in 16th century Venice. And she was so taken by the voice she had found that she just kept plowing ahead. And an agent at Writer's House called Dan Lazar saw a novel in it, and so did a little brown editor named Judy Klein, who's editor-in-chief there, actually. Klein calls it gorgeous storytelling, and the book is titled The Book of Madness and Cures.
Well, we are talking right now on our special Friday edition of Beyond the Book. We call it PW's Week Ahead. We're chatting with Michael Coffey, co-editorial director at PW, telling us about some of the novels that are going to get some special attention in the coming issue. There's a few more you want to talk about.
Yes, there's one by Brandon Jones coming from the very literary and respected small press out of North Carolina called Algonquin. Brandon Jones's book is called All Women in Springtime. And when the editorial board at Algonquin read this manuscript, they just couldn't believe it was a first novel. It was so well crafted and written by a sculptor, a metal sculptor who was living in Hawaii. But Jones apparently was intrigued when President Bush declared North Korea part of the Axis of Evil. And he began to research everything he could about North Korea and has come up with a novel about forced labor camps and human trafficking in that country. Ranging even further abroad, perhaps, there's a novel by a Sri Lankan named Shihan Karantilaka. He grew up amidst bombs and curfews, as he calls it. And Grey Wolf will publish his debut. It's titled The Legend of Pradeep Mathew. And it's about an aging sports writer with a very bad liver who heads out in search of a legendary cricketer. One might recall a few years back another novel about cricket that got everyone's attention. That was Joseph O'Neill's Netherland, which did very well in both hardcover and later in trade paperback, and I think was a favorite of Barack Obama's.
And finally, another novel that begins in a place rather far off.
Yes, and this is apparently a very moving book by Vadi Ratner. She was grew up in Cambodia. She was 5 years old when the Khmer Rouge seized power there and began a systematic genocide that killed 2 million people within about 3 or 4 years. Only Vadi and her mother survived in her family. They managed to escape across the Thailand border. Her novel, In the Shadow of the Banyan, tells her story from the perspective of a seven-year-old. Simon & Schuster will publish, and the executive editor there, Trish Todd, says that Vadi is just, quote, an amazing soul and a brilliant writer. And this may very well be a very brilliant debut.
Well, we wish them all good luck, and we thank you, Michael Coffey, a co-editorial director at PW, for giving us that rundown. And now, as we always do every week, we're going to turn to Rose Fox, PW Reviews editor, who blogs at Genreville. Welcome back to Beyond the Book, Rose.
Thank you, Chris.
And what books have you brought us this week?
We've got quite a range this week. In fiction, we start out with a Q&A with the German author Marcel Bayer about his novel Kaltenberg, and we also have a review of that in this week's issue. We're also highlighting a couple of our fiction reviews. We have The Coldest Night by Robert Olmsted, and this is a gritty coming-of-age novel set partly in 1950s Appalachia and partly in North Korea during the Korean War. We also cover The Lifeboat by Charlotte Rogan, which tells the story of a young woman who escapes a sinking steamship, losing her husband in the process, only to be put on trial later for her alleged criminal behavior while on the lifeboat. We've also got a new novel from P.F. Kluge called The Master Blaster, which is set in Saipan. You may know Kluge's name because he wrote the article that became the film Dog Day Afternoon. And we have a debut, too, not one of the ones that Michael mentioned. This is by Nick Dybeck, and it's called When Captain Flint Was Still a Good Man. In Mystery and Thriller, we have another Q&A with Tony Hayes. He discusses The Stolen Bride, which is his fourth mystery based on the tales of King Arthur. And he's got an unusual background for a novelist writing mystery tales. He got the idea for the series while in an airport, traveling for his job with the Overseas Security Advisory Council in Kuwait. We also cover Larry Bond's Exit Plan, which is a timely political thriller in which the Iranians realize they can't build a nuclear bomb in the near future, so they decide to fake a bomb test to draw the Israelis or the Americans into making a first strike and starting a war. And we've got a Q&A with Larry Bond in next week's issue. And we've also, from talented Icelandic author Yrsa Sigurdardottir, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, it's Ashes to Dust, in which bodies discovered in the basement of a house buried by volcanic ash pose problems for a man who lived in the house in his youth.
Well, that sounds like they would pose problems, but nothing like some of the problems that come up in the science fiction and fantasy section. In fact, I suppose we could put that under the section Grim and Grimmer.
Yeah, that's the headline we've got for a box of four reviews in science fiction this week. We have four pretty gloomy titles. We have Blackbirds by Chuck Wendig, in which a woman sees but cannot stop the deaths of people she meets. And she actually makes a living from robbing their corpses because it's all she can do. We also have three gloomy post-apocalyptic novels. Brian Evanson's Immobility, which has a paraplegic hero who's lost his memory and set on an impossible quest. We have Martin Berman Gorvine's 36, in which a man tries to save the 36 righteous people from being killed off and destroying the world. And John Birmingham's Angels of Vengeance, which wraps up a post-apocalyptic trilogy. And so those are all coming out in April and May, which I think is a great time to be sunny and cheerful, but I guess they're good for anyone who hates spring and sunny cheerfulness.
Well, you know, the apocalypse never gets old, I guess, is the thing to say about that. What about in romance?
In romance, we have a romantic suspense novel, Rooted in Danger by Terry O'Dell. And this is a book in which a magnate's obstinate daughter leaves home. She wants nothing to do with her father. She doesn't care how rich he is. So, of course, he hires someone to go after her. But when the investigator finds her, he realizes other people are looking for her and they do not have her best interests in mind. So the two of them connect as they run from the people trying to kill her. And we also have The Wedding Beat by Devin Cipher. This is getting a lot of advance buzz. Cipher is a vows columnist for the New York Times, and he has written a charming and perhaps somewhat autobiographical book about a wedding columnist who is sent to cover the wedding of the woman he loves, who's marrying a jerk who doesn't deserve her, of course. And in comics, we have Jim Henson's Tale of Sand. This is a graphic novel illustrated by Ramon K. Perez based on an unproduced feature-length screenplay by Jim Henson. Yes, that Jim Henson, as in The Muppets, and Jerry Jewell. And Perez's striking illustrations turn what could be an eccentric oddity into a haunting story. It's a really beautiful piece of work. And we also cover Daughter of Her Father's Eyes. That's D-O-T-T-E-R, as in dot your eyes and cross your T's. That's by Mary S. Talbot and Brian Talbot. It's a graphic memoir that intertwines two coming-of-age stories in a powerful narrative about family, gender, and identity.
Well, if Andrew Albanese were here this week, Rose, he would get in a dig about the Giants winning the Super Bowl, and he would also remind us that now that football is over, baseball can't be far behind. You've got two big books on baseball.
Yes, we do. Just in time for spring training. We have The Emerald Diamond by Charlie Rosen. If you're familiar with FoxSports.com, he's one of the analysts there. And he writes about how the Irish influenced baseball. And we also cover Driving Mr. Yogi by Harvey Araton, which is a loving look back at the legendary Yogi Berra. That one is a real heartwarmer and a perfect gift for anyone who gets cynical early in the season when their favorite team isn't doing so well. In nonfiction, we also have a Q&A with Eloisa James She's best known as a romance novelist, but this is about her memoir of her recent sabbatical year in Paris. And James is the pen name of Professor Mary Bly, who's the daughter of the poet Robert Bly, and her father figures prominently in the book. We have a review of The Violinist Thumb by science writer Sam Keen, a follow-up to his best-selling The Disappearing Spoon, which is a witty book on genetics. And this one is about what our DNA can tell us about our evolution and our place in the animal kingdom, and also the limits of what it can tell us. We cover Attention All Passengers by William J. McGee. He's a former flight operations manager who turned journalist and consumer advocate, and he explains what's wrong with commercial air travel. And we also cover Horseshoe Crabs and Velvet Worms. Richard Forty wrote that. He entertains readers with stories about plants, animals, and other creatures that have survived from Earth's early days. And finally, we have a book that I'm personally very excited about. Urban studies absolutely fascinate me. I love cities. And this is just called City, A Guidebook for the Urban Age. It's by P.D. Smith, and it is an engrossing illustrated guide to 7,000 years of urban life all around the world. It's phenomenal. We have a religion section this week in which we cover Fixing the Moral Deficit, A Balanced Way to Balance the Budget. That's by Ronald J. Sider, and he lays out Bible-based middle-of-the-road proposals for solving the fiscal problems facing the U.S., including reducing the defense budget, there's that whole swords to plowshares thing, and also decreasing the influence of money on politics.
Well, in children's, you've got some books that are teaching us some important lessons in life.
Yes, we learn the difference between the exclamation point of joy and the interrobang, that's the exclamation point and the question mark side by side, of surprise. And we have The Duckling Gets a Cookie by Mo Willems. And you just have to say the title. You just have to, because the interrobang is right there at the end. And that's a punchy and snarky sequel to The Pigeon Finds a Hot Dog, in which the pigeon is outraged that the duckling gets a whole cookie after also getting to share the pigeon's hot dog. And the fans of The Pigeon and The Duckling will very much enjoy this follow-up to the earlier book. We also note that Seriously, Just Go to Sleep is coming out. That is a cleaner version of Adam Mansbach's famously filthy children's book, though our reviewer feels that without the obscenity, it is not quite as successful. And in young adult fiction, we cover The False Prince by Jennifer A. Nielsen, which is a highly enjoyable medieval fantasy in which three boys compete to impersonate a missing heir to the throne. We've got a couple interesting titles in our online annex this week. Fly Into Fire, which is by Susan Jane Bigelow, is the sequel to Broken, which was one of the major science fiction books of last year. And it's filled with hairpin plot turns, breathtaking escapes, compelling characters, and a profound sense of humanity. And this is set in a world where there have been superheroes, comic book style, but things have gone horribly wrong. And they're really profound and interesting books. And we also cover Philip Gerard's well-crafted first essay collection, The Patron Saint of Dreams. And a reviewer says it's like spending time with an easygoing yet erudite uncle, sitting around on the front porch on lazy afternoons, drinking beers and speculating on all manner of personal and historical oddments. And finally, we have our pick of the week. It's another religion title. This one's called Religion for Atheists, A Non-Believer's Guide to the Uses of Religion by philosopher Alain de Botton. And it's a highly original and thought-provoking book about what religion does well and what non-believers can learn from it.
Well, Rose Fox, PW Reviews editor, who blogs at Genreville, thanks for that wrap-up of this week's reviews. And, you know, I'm delighted but not terribly surprised to learn that the Irish were influential in the history of baseball.
Yeah, there might have just been a few hints throughout history that they had a little something to do with it. But I think there will probably be some things in that book that would surprise even you.
Well, you know, as a member of the Irish clan, if you will, I'm never surprised to find that we've influenced something. In fact, we just about had something to do with almost everything, it seems like. Anyway, Rose Fox, indeed, thank you so much. And I also want to thank very specially Michael Coffey. Michael Coffey, co-editorial director of Publishers Weekly, given us the rundown of some of the first novels that are getting special attention in this week's PW. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. That was fun.
And we'll tell everybody once again that Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.